is to capture a Krestang starship, a Theranin star carrier, and to raid an asteroid base to get an Elder Controller device to shut down the wormhole that gave the enemy access to Earth. With me initially lying to people, Earth would still be under the cruel control of the Krestang. It had all been worth it. I would do it again without regret. That didn't make me feel any better about having done it. Maybe all people who worked in Intel feel that way, until they get used to it. Sir, William spoke up to defend me. However you did it, we on Earth are very grateful. Things were getting desperate. It was bad enough what the lizards were doing on Earth. It was almost worse that we had no communication with the X-4. We knew you had landed on Perdassus. You called it Paradise. That's all the Krestang told us. Sims and I shared a knowing look.
We didn't hear anything from Earth, she said sadly, until we got our first fortune cookie. You know about the fortune cookies? She asked the question to Williams.
Not until I read your debriefing, Williams said. That must have been a closely held secret on Earth.
And then the fortune cookie stopped, Sims said, because the Krestang stopped bringing supplies from Earth.
Yes, Williams added. We knew things were going south for the X-4 when the Krestang shut down the space elevator in Ecuador. The thinking on Earth was the only reason to do that was they didn't need to ship a lot of supplies off-world anymore. There were rumors going around that the entire expeditionary force had been wiped out. We knew the Krestang on Earth were pissed about something. I guess that must have been the Ruhar raid when your team shot down those two dropships, the whales. Could be, I nodded. My parents told me that they thought I was dead. It surprised the hell out of them when I called.
What was your cover story? Williams asked. You didn't tell them the truth, did you?
It surprised me that Williams didn't know the cover story that UNEF had cooked up until I remembered that he, and most of the Spec Ops people, had been selected less than 2 weeks before the Dutchman departed, and those 2 weeks had been frantic 18-hour days for everyone involved. Although the entire original merry band of pirates had all been given the cover story, UNEF hadn't planned to release it to the public until after the Flying Dutchman left Earth orbit.
The cover story? Your team wasn't read in before we left?
There wasn't time, sir. UNEF wanted us aboard the Dutchman as soon as possible after we were selected. I think part of that was operational security. We couldn't talk to people on Earth if we were already in orbit.
That made sense to me.
I remembered that UNEF had insisted all communications to and from the Dutchman went through UNEF HQ in Paris. Skippy, naturally, had ignored silly monkey regulations. As the commander, I had done my best to comply with the rules, whether I liked it or not.
UNEF's cover story, it should have been released to the public on Earth by now, is that the merry band of pirates, you know, the original crew, came back to Earth aboard a Theranin ship because the Theranin were upset that the Krestang on Earth were acting without authority. The public thinks we were passengers on the ship, flown by Theranin, and the Theranin killed the Krestang on Earth because those lizards were ransacking the planet of an ally. Governments thought it would be too much for the public to take if they learned that both the Ruhar and the Krestang are our enemies, that the entire galaxy is hostile to humans, hostile with an overwhelming technological advantage. For myself, I'm not sure the Ruhar are our enemies. They seem more likely to ignore us than bother conquering us. I also don't know that the Ruhar would go out of their way to help us. They have enough on their plate. When I was on Paradise, after the Ruhar took the place back, the deputy administrator told me they had plans to sustain UNEF for a time until humans could grow enough food for themselves. That's all great. It all depends on what happens with the Ruhar's wider military campaign. Really, it depends on how the Jarraptha fare against the Theranin. If the Jarraptha suffer a major defeat, the Ruhar won't have the resources to spare for a low-tech species like humans. UNEF has a lot of mouths to feed on Paradise, and I'm sure most of the Ruhar there don't feel like they owe humans anything.
Do you trust the Ruhar? Sims asked. You had more contact with them than I did.
I told her about the intel the Burgermeister gave to me. Intel that I had trusted. Intel Skippy later told me was 100% accurate.
I trust that the Burgermeister, the deputy administrator, was sincere about what she told me, I said honestly.
I don't trust whether she will be able to deliver. It's not only up to her.
I turned my attention back to Graziano.
Doctor?
Yes, I will create a summary of what we know to date.
It is not much, he said, almost as an apology.
We all understand that, Doctor. Do the best you can, and whatever resources you need to learn more about the people who lived here, you will have it. Graziano asked for more people and more equipment to assist in excavating the cathedral complex. There was no need for me to request volunteers. Everyone wanted to help. Graziano's problem was not lack of help, it was restraining the volunteers' enthusiasm for moving rocks and digging soil. Skippy volunteered also. He assigned a submine to research what he could about Newark, attempting to figure how a civilization could have arisen on such a frozen planet, and what caused them to become extinct. He called me while I was helping Dr. Zheng collect samples from a pond 300 kilometers from our home canyon. Joe, after you found those bones, the tools, and the ruins, I took a look at Newark, and I discovered that something is very wrong with this star system. Wrong? Beyond it being a crappy place to live? Very much so. Disturbingly so. I wasn't paying attention before because I'm busy enough repairing the Dutchman and passively scanning for enemy starships, so I didn't bother to investigate this star system beyond the basics. It didn't matter before. Now it does. Very much. There is no way a complex species, an entire civilization, could have evolved on Newark, the way the planet is now. There are currently no land animals at all, above the microscopic level. Clearly, the planet's climate has changed radically. The star's output has not varied significantly within the last several million years. That cannot be the reason for the climate changing so radically. Since you found those perplexing ruins, I ran back a mathematical model of the orbits of all seven planets, and the math tells me that something disrupted their orbits about 2.7 million years ago. Wow. I read something like that in a book once. Incredible. Yeah, I think it was a star. I tried to remember the details of that book. I read this book a long time ago. This rogue star passed close to the star system in the book, and its gravity screwed up the orbits of all the planets. Astonishing. The people in the book had to leave their planet and go live on a planet they figured would end up orbiting this new star after it left their star system. Their original planet was going to be ejected away from its star or become uninhabitable or something. The writer's name was McDermott. McDevitt, something like that. Amazing. Absolutely unbelievable. I paused. I'm surprised you haven't heard of this before, Skippy. It must happen sometimes in the galaxy. I remember now. The star was a brown dwarf. That's a star so small. I know what a brown dwarf is, Joe, and yes, wandering stars occasionally do disrupt the orbits of planets and star systems they approach. That's not what I find astonishing. Now he had me intrigued. Then what is? You read a book. He laughed. Damn it, I should have remembered what an asshole he is. Yes, Skippy, I did. This was a comic book, I assume. Lots of pictures. It wasn't... Oh, sorry, I should have said graphic novel. I don't want to upset the nerds. It was a real book, Skippy, and I've read more than one book. Wow, so both of these books you read. Did you have to go real slow, sound out the words as your finger slid along the page? Forget I mentioned it, please. Under my breath, I added, asshole. I heard that. Can we go back to what you found about the orbits of planets in this system? Was it a brown dwarf that caused it? No, it wasn't a wandering star or planet of any type. That would merely be interesting. The truth is, as I said, disturbing, perplexing, frightening. Look at your iPad, I'll show you. The iPad popped up a diagram of the star system, not to scale, I assumed, with eight planets all circling the star. Circling, not oval-shaped loops. Newark was highlighted in blue, the gas giant in red. Skippy, why are there eight planets in this diagram? And I thought Newark was the second one from the star. The diagram listed Newark as the third planet. I used my fingertips to zoom in the display to adjust the inner planets to confirm. Newark was shown as the third planet. The new eighth planet was close to the star, like Mercury. There was no such planet in the original diagram Skippy had put on the main bridge display back when he explained why he set course for this system. This, Skippy explained, is the star system 2.7 million years ago. Newark's orbit was nice and circular. It was slightly further outward from the center of this star's Goldilocks zone than Earth is from its own habitable zone, so Newark would have been slightly cooler overall. I would need ice cores to confirm. Still, I am very confident in my analysis. For many millions of years, Newark was reasonably similar to Earth in terms of habitability, which explains how complex life forms could have arisen there. Complex life forms such as the sentient beings who built the ruins you found.
Sentient beings, all dead. An entire species.
What happened to this place?
The iPad display began to move, planets circling in their serene orbits. Then, Newark, suddenly, by itself, moved outward. Its orbit was still a circle. It was a bigger circle, further from the star.
Joe, something pushed Newark out of its original orbit. The new orbit was beyond the outer edge of the habitable zone. The planet began to rapidly freeze, more rapidly than the low-tech species here could compensate for. They froze and became extinct, probably within less than 1 year. All of them.
Holy shit. Oh my God.
There was nothing holy about what happened here, Joe, Skippy said with surprising vehemence.
I agree.
The new orbit. It was still a circle? Why is it an ellipse now?
The speed of the display increased, and the orbits of the planets began to wobble, disturbed from the graceful tracks they had followed for 1 billion years.
Changing the orbit of Newark affected the gas giant planet I am now orbiting. That had a cascading effect on the entire system. The two gas giant planets in this system had a roughly 2-to-1 resonance, like Jupiter and Saturn in your home star system. Jupiter orbits twice for every 1 time Saturn circles your sun. When that resonance here was disrupted, the orbits of the other planets were disturbed. The orbit of Newark, and what is now the first planet, became elliptical. What was the original innermost planet, I speculate it was a small, rocky body like Mercury, had its orbit made so elliptical that it fell into the star. That is why there are now only 7 planets. Newark will eventually re-establish a circular orbit, slightly closer to the star than its original track. I predict that will happen within the next 20 million years. The ice will melt, and Newark will become a pleasant place to live. Again.
A smart-ass remark popped into my head about this being a good time to buy cheap real estate on Newark. I squashed it silently. An entire sentient species had died here. Died horribly. Their entire civilization buried under a smothering blanket of snow and ice. There was nothing amusing about what had happened.
How? What you showed me was Newark moving on its own. That can't happen, right?
No, it can't. And given the native species' primitive level of technology, it isn't anything they did by accident or otherwise, Joe.
His voice dropped to a near whisper.
Pushing a planet like this took elder-level technology.
Wow.
Wow.
I pondered that a minute.
You think the Rindaloo got hold of some elder devices and used it here?
Not a chance, Skippy said. The Rindaloo hadn't even discovered fire 2.7 million years ago. It couldn't be them. The elders transcended long before that, and they wouldn't have done something horrible like this.
Joe, this scares the hell out of me. I have gaps in my memories that are annoying. This goes beyond annoying. Something significant happened in the galaxy that I can't account for at all. This cannot be possible, yet I cannot deny the facts.
Is there any chance your analysis is wrong?
There was an uncomfortable moment of silence.
Joe, I'm not sure of anything right now. Based on the data, my analysis is correct. However, I could be misinterpreting the data, or I could be missing something, or my analytical functions could be faulty in ways that I cannot detect. You know that I suspect something unknown is wrong with me.
Skippy, I'm sure you're doing everything you can.
It's not enough.
He actually sounded sad, almost lost.
Skip, I said. Hey, getting real here. I'm a dumb monkey. The best I can do is to be the best dumb monkey I can be. You're an AI with intelligence and knowledge I can't even imagine. No matter how smart you are, you can only do the best you can. You rescued my entire species without even stretching your abilities. No matter how incredible you are, you can only do the best you can. Whatever is wrong with your memories, it's not your fault.
Thank you, Joe. Your words would be more comforting if they weren't being spoken by a flea-infested monkey.
Damn it. Common courtesy wasn't in Skippy's nature.
This something you suspect is wrong with you. Is that why you're such an asshole?
Huh?
No, that's me.
No hope of fixing that, then.
I wouldn't count on it, no, he said. I appreciated his honesty.
Hey, well, maybe when you contact the Collective, they will have answers for us, right?
That's what you want. Answers.
Answers like why I was buried in the ground on Paradise and how I got here. Answers like how Elder-level technology was used during a time when no intelligent being inhabited this galaxy. Answers like how Elder technology was used for unquestionably evil purposes.
Yeah. I want answers like that.
Chapter 18. Joe, 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 wake up! My Z-phone earpiece blared at me. Army training allowed me to snap upright on my cot, mostly alert, one hand fumbling for the Z-phone earpiece, the other hand automatically holding a boot so I could stuff a foot into it.
What is it, Skippy?
No immediate emergency. You can drop back to code yellow.
You scared the hell out of me. It was almost code yellow in my shorts, you ass!
What is it that couldn't wait? I checked the clock on the Z-phone. 3.5 hours until I was going to wake up on my own.
Two things. Both fairly important. Very important, actually. Good news and bad news.
Bad news first, please. Bad news meant I might have to do something about it ASAP. Good news could wait this time. Until morning and a cup of coffee. Maybe 2 cups. I put the other boot on. There was not going to be any more sleep for me that night.
Of course, Skippy agreed. 2 of the Krystang leaders here were talking on their phones. One complained about how their workforce is lazy and not moving fast enough. The other one, who I think is their leader, said they need to move faster because he expects a ship to pick them up in the next 60 to 80 days.
What? That is bad news.
I stood up and pulled pants on. Sleep could wait.
You told us they wouldn't have a ship coming to pick them up for a year or more.
That was based on communications I intercepted, yes. Based on this new information, I now suspect those communications were the leaders lying to their workforce about the timeline for their departure. I now believe that when the ship arrives, the 6 leaders plan to take the Elder artifacts with them and abandon their workers here to starve. This does explain a discrepancy I have noticed. Their food supply does not appear to be sufficient to support their population for the official duration of their mission. Before, my assumption was that the leaders at some point planned to kill their workforce in order to stretch their food supply. All of which were things Skippy should have told me, or I should have inquired about.
You can't screw with that ship's sensors, like you're doing with the satellites?
No, not through the micro-wormhole. The connection doesn't have the bandwidth for me to transmit a submind. The satellites don't have the capacity to store a submind anyway. And also, through the wormhole, I can't activate the Theranin nanovirus that is likely embedded in the Krystang ship's systems.
This was going to be a problem. A very big problem.
This new ship will be able to see us then?
Yep, very likely.
With pants and a shirt on, I could think more clearly.
Damn it. All right, then we'll need to burrow underground, remove all trace of our habitation from the surface, and hide until that ship goes away.
That was going to be difficult. Our success would depend mostly on the newly arrived ship wanting to pick up the Krystang here quickly and not seeing any need for a serious scan of the planet's surface.
Negative? No burrowing. Not only burrowing, anyway.
Why not?
I hoped he didn't have even worse news for us.
Because of the good news, Joe. We have an awesome opportunity.
Ah, crap. When you're in the military and someone tells you about an opportunity, it's almost never good news for you.
You found us a great deal on car insurance?
No, even better.
Joe, seriously, this is awesome.
Joe, they have an AI.
That's great, Skippy.
What did he think was awesome about that? All starships had an AI of some sort as their central computing core. Even dropships had a type of AI running their navigation system. So what if the lizards had an AI at their scavenger base?
They probably used an AI to figure out which Elder junk was valuable.
You don't understand. While those 2 lizards were talking, they had a video feed going, and behind one of them, I saw some of the Elder artifacts they have recovered sitting on a table. One of those artifacts is an Elder AI.
That was awesome news.
What, an AI like you? Another shiny beer can? I asked excitedly.
Did it tell you about the Collective?
I haven't been able to contact it. I don't understand why not.
Maybe it's dormant because the Kristang are a starfaring species. That is why you couldn't talk to the Kristang or the Ruhar on Paradise, right? That doesn't explain why it won't talk to me. We AIs can communicate on a higher level. Biologicals wouldn't know about it. Also troubling is this AI, like myself, appears to be connected to an Elder Starship crash. What the Kristang here are digging up is debris from an Elder Starship that fell out of orbit. In this case, I estimate the ship crashed between 2.3 and 2.5 million years ago. Dreading the answer I may get, I asked, "Oh boy, you're telling me no burrowing because we need to get this AI before the Kristang ship arrives to take everything away?" "Exactly. We can't miss this opportunity. If this AI can direct me to the Collective, your mission is complete and you can go home when the Dutchman is repaired. If the Kristang take the AI away, we might never find it again. The Kristang have no idea what it is, of course. They're only taking it with them because they know it is somehow connected to the Elder ship. The AI may spend eternity sitting under a pile of junk." "Yeah, or on a dusty shelf in a warehouse." "Skippy, I see this is a great opportunity. I truly do. We're a long way from the Kristang. We don't have any transport, and they have air power. We can't just knock on the door and ask for the AI. We'll have to fight for it. And in a fight, we'll have to kill all of them, every single one of them, so survivors can't tell their ship they were attacked by humans. Huh. Also, if we do kill them all, that ship is going to be asking a lot of questions when it arrives. You need to let me think on this."
"You're the military genius, Joe. You'll think of something."
"Genius? Relatively speaking, of course. On a monkey scale." "Hey, you need to think fast. We don't have a lot of time."
"I'll get right on it," I said quietly, stepping out from my private cubbyhole and into the main chamber of the cavern, where rows of cots contained sleeping people. Then I stopped suddenly, struck by a thought. A frightening thought.
"You said you think this Elder ship with the AI crashed between 2.3 and 2.5 million years ago?"
"Yeah. Why?"
"An Elder starship with an Elder AI crashed only a couple hundred thousand years after Elder technology pushed this planet out of orbit?" "The coincidental timing has not escaped my notice, yes. I find this highly suspicious."
"Maybe this AI knows what happened," I said, and as I spoke, a chill ran up my spine.
Ah, shit. Could this AI have been involved? No. Categorically, no. Not possible. That is not possible. No sentient being connected to Elder civilization, whether biological or artificial in origin, would have, could have, done something this evil. It is more likely the Elder ship and this planet fell victim to the same sinister forces. Joe, this scares the shit out of me, so to speak.
After considering Skippy's news about the Kristang ship arriving early, and his suggestion that we raid the scavenger camp for the comm node and AI, I called the entire Spec Ops team together in the main cabin. When everyone had assembled, I stood on a table and announced, "People, we've made the most of our opportunity to land on this planet, train here, and learn about the planet. Now I am excited to announce that we have a bonus opportunity." There were groans from the Spec Ops teams from all five countries. No matter what the nationality, everyone understood what opportunity means in the military. Garcia raised his hand to get my attention.
"Sir, in this case, is bone us one word or two?"
I joined in the laughter. It was a good sign that the people under my command felt confident they could joke around with me. We had bonded as a team during our exile on Newark. The hardcore elite Spec Ops people and their sergeant pretending to be a colonel commander. "It could be both, Garcia. Here's the situation. Skippy had discovered that the Kristang scavenger team here has not only found a comm node in the wreckage of an Elder starship, they found another AI, another beer can, like Skippy. Or, I should say," I hastened to add before Skippy became offended, "another Elder AI, since I think we can all agree there is no one like Skippy. Hopefully." That remark got a chuckle. "It is my intention for us to raid the Kristang and take the two items we need." There was no chuckling. People gasped. Smythe spoke first.
"Sir," he asked, "the point of us hiding in caves and ghosting their satellites is so the Kristang won't know we're here at all. Now we're talking about attacking them, risking an attack on an enemy with at least equivalent weapons and the advantage of air power. Good as we are,"
He looked around at his fellow Spec Ops troops, all of whom were supremely confident they were the best.
These Kristang are bigger, faster, and tougher than any of us. I understand our friend Skippy is eager to get this AI, but how is this worth the risk to us?
It is worth the risk, because if this new AI can tell Skippy how to contact the Collective or the Elder Comm Node Works, we don't need to go wandering around the galaxy again. And remember, the Kristang here also have an Elder Communications Node, the very thing we came all the way out here to find. Getting that AI could be a huge bonus, but getting a Comm Node will mean our mission will be complete. Also, I'm hoping this new AI, or Skippy, or both of them, will agree to guide the Dutchman back to Earth before they, you know, beam up, or whatever it is Skippy hopes to do. In that case, we will not only return home instead of being stuck out here forever, we will also be providing humanity with a Theranin star carrier that can be examined, taken apart, and possibly reverse-engineered. That is an opportunity I think we cannot miss. That hit home. People nodded, looking at each other. A star carrier, permanently in Earth orbit. A technology far beyond even the Kristang. The basis, perhaps, of humanity building a defensive capability, a starship, even a fleet of our own someday. "We're only going," I added, "if we have a plan to minimize the risk. Unfortunately, I haven't told you the best part yet. Skippy has also learned that a ship will be arriving here to retrieve the Kristang in 60 to 80 days. People gasped. "Yeah, I know. The Flying Dutchman will not be ready in 60 days, so we won't have the ship's weapons or dropships available for an attack. We will have to walk all the way there and attack with the equipment we have available. Frankly, if I didn't have a Special Forces unit available, I wouldn't even consider attacking the Kristang. Again, we are not going unless we have a very solid plan to minimize our risk. If we can't do that, then what we do is hunker down here, remain inside the caverns, until that Kristang ship goes away."
"An attack against a species with equivalent technology on their ground, and we can only bring with us what we're able to carry on our backs," Smythe mused aloud. I couldn't tell whether he was skeptical or intrigued.
"The motto of the SAS is who dares wins, Captain Smythe?" I asked.
"This," William said quietly, "needs to be one hell of a plan, sir."
"Agreed," I said. "And for that I am grateful that I have 6 experienced special operations leaders, and our ace in the hole. Don't forget about Skippy. He may be all the way on the other side of this star system, but right now he is controlling everything the Kristang see through their satellites. It is a long walk to the Kristang base. One thing we will not have to worry about is being detected on satellite images. I am counting on Skippy giving us the advantage of surprise. We're going to hit them by surprise. Hit them hard, and they won't even know there is anyone else on this planet until our bullets start exploding. When I dismissed people from the meeting to begin thinking up ideas on how to attack the Kristang, I walked over to Chang.
"Colonel, we now need a single leader of the Spec Ops teams. I want you to put together a list of..."
"Captain Smythe," Chang interrupted me.
"Smythe?"
"Smythe. And if you ask the other 5 team leaders, they will tell you the same. Smythe has everyone's respect, everyone likes him, and he has by far the most experience commanding special operations in combat. He was up to be promoted to major, but he turned it down because UNEF wanted the team leaders all to be captains so they would be equal in rank."
"Huh. I didn't know that."
"It's in his personnel file, sir," Chang chided me gently.
"Smythe, then?"
"Yes."
"You put some thought into this ahead of time," I observed.
"I am the executive officer. I wouldn't be much use if I didn't keep you out of trouble, sir."
Before we could attack the scavenger base and take the AI and comm node, we needed a plan. The Spec Ops leaders began looking at maps and gathering data as soon as I dismissed people from the meeting. What I did was call Skippy. Before we made elaborate plans, I wanted to try something very simple and easy.
"Hey, Skippy, I've got a question for you."
"What?"
"You said even a nuke wouldn't damage you, right?"
"True."
"Great.
True, both that I said it and that a nuke can't harm me, to be clear, since I'm talking to a monkey."
"Uh-huh. Same with this other AI?"
"Possibly.
I don't know for certain. It depends on the strength of its connection to the local space-time. If that connection is weak, an explosion could damage it."
"Crap.
Why did you ask?
Because, I said, mentally crossing one idea off my list, I was hoping you could hit the Kristang base with a couple missiles, then all we would need to do is sort through the debris to find this beer can. I mean, AI. The Theranin missiles aboard the Dutchman weren't tipped with nuclear warheads. They used some fancy high-tech molecular compression device that had a high explosive yield without radiation.
Aha!
Unfortunately, there are four problems with your idea. First, even one of our missiles might damage the AI, and we can't risk that in any way. Second, I would be launching the missiles at very long range, which would make it almost impossible to time their impact when all the Kristang are at their base. Third, a missile will certainly damage the comm node, which is almost as important as the AI. Elder communications nodes are rather fragile devices, for reasons I had best not explain to monkeys. And fourth, perhaps most important, we currently don't have any missiles aboard the Flying Dutchman.
What?
I asked, surprised. We had eight. Dum-dum. You forget I used one to carry the micro-wormhole to Newark?
Fine, seven. We had seven missiles.
You are entirely 100% accurate. We had seven missiles. To repair the Dutchman, I had to disassemble them for raw materials and fuel.
Well, that's just freaking great, I fumed. When were you going to mention that? What the hell is the point of me being a commander if I didn't know what is going on with my own ship?
I'm building a starship from moon dust here. You want every detail? We also no longer have a galley or a gym. Those parts of the ship are currently being used as a crude particle accelerator to transmute rare elements I need.
A warship that now does not have any missiles. It's kind of an important fact I need to know, Skippy. Although we're going to need a galley eventually.
Damn, Joe. What is so important about a freaking galley, anyway?
Skippy, we have a crew of people who, whether they think about it consciously or not, in the back of their minds, they know we're never going home.
You said it. After you contact the Collective, you'll be gone, and it's very unlikely we can fly the ship all the way back to Earth by ourselves. Food? Good food, prepared by people we know, served hot in a place we can gather and enjoy it together. That's important. That is vital to morale, Skippy. We need it. It is one of the few comforts we have out here, no matter how bad the situation is. If we can look forward to eating something good, that gives us hope. It's a meat sack thing, you understand? A galley is important. We need it.
Also, Skippy chuckled, your galley does provide me with endless opportunities for amusement.
Okay, by the time you get back aboard, we will have a galley, at least part of a gym, and three, maybe four missiles. As the reactors come back online and I process raw materials into usable substances, I will be able to divert resources to habitation needs and weapons. My projection is that we will have enough materials and energy to assemble up to 11 missiles total. Not all of these missiles will have full capability. We simply don't have the resources for that type of manufacturing.
Skippy, I do appreciate the enormous amount of work you're doing. At my parents' house, weekend projects were carefully planned because a round trip to a decent hardware store or lumber yard took over 2.5 hours. Skippy's hardware store was whatever tools he could make by himself. Remember that when you get back here, and parts of the ship are still off-limits to be decontaminated from high-energy radiation. I'm sure we will simply love what you've done with the place.
It will truly be magical. I'm going with an arts and crafts-style theme with a blending of elements from Disney and French Bordello. Blowing up the scavenger base with a missile won't work. What is your backup plan?
That was the backup plan, Skippy. The original plan is we raid the scavenger's base. I'm working on that.
The reason we were still working on plans for the raid was we didn't have a workable plan. The best plan would be for our special forces to attack the scavenger's base at night wearing powered armor. Speed, power, surprise. That plan had all the advantages. We would need to sneak up to their base, take cover, and wait until their aircraft was safely down and secured. Thanks to Skippy, we could track their aircraft, and we had a complete layout of their base. Thanks to the fact that the scavenger leaders didn't trust their forced labor, and therefore had the base covered with surveillance, Skippy tapped into their systems and could see almost everything inside their base. There was a very basic problem with that plan. Our armored suits didn't store enough power to walk all the way to the scavenger base. The stupid Kristang hadn't built their suits with removable power cells, so we couldn't bring along enough energy to have a person in a suit carry an empty suit and leapfrog to get there.
In regular use, powered suits were supposed to be supported by portable recharging units, and we didn't have even a single one of those with us. However we got there, we wouldn't have armored suits for the assault. As good as our special forces were, they wouldn't be so special matched up against Kristang. We would be facing over 30 larger, stronger, faster, genetically perfected aliens, and 4, possibly 6 of them, would have armored suits. We needed a way to even the odds before we attacked, and so far, we didn't have a good plan to do that. The special forces worked feverishly to develop an attack plan, and so far, none of our ideas minimized the risk sufficiently for me to have confidence that we could succeed. That night, I woke up in the middle of the night with an idea. My unconscious mind is apparently smarter than I am when I'm awake. I don't know what that says about me. My plan, and it was pretty freaking brilliant in my humble opinion, would accomplish 2 things. Whittling down the number of Kristang we were facing, and removing the Kristang's advantage of air power. If the plan worked, that is. Knowing I wouldn't get back to sleep, I got out of my cot and walked quietly across the cavern to get coffee, tiptoeing carefully around people sleeping on cots and sleeping pads. Then I walked outside, where it was chilly and damp, but thankfully not raining, and I called Skippy to discuss my idea with him. Surprisingly, he shut up long enough for me to explain my idea. Skippy said. This is your plan. Perhaps I had better get out the dictionary and explain the definition of the word plan to you. I know what a plan is, Skippy. Other than the fact that this plan was dreamed up by a monkey, do you see any major problems? I have to admit that this plan is possibly not the most incredibly awful stupid thing I've ever heard. Possibly. It is clearly in the top 5 of all stupid ideas in this galaxy, of course. From there, it's a matter of judgment. Damn. Thanks for the vote of confidence, Skippy. Seriously, do you see any problems? A lot of the plan relies on you. It relies entirely on me, you moron. And here I am on the other side of the freaking star system building a starship out of moon dust. The biggest problem, and if you had more than 2 brain cells, you'd know this, is that your plan has multiple potential points of failure. Unless all parts of the plan work correctly, the entire plan collapses. Okay, I hear you. You got any better ideas? No, I'm good. Let's try this one. What? I almost shouted. You bust my balls about me making a stupid plan, and you're okay with it? Yeah, sure. It's good enough. Come on, Joe. You're monkeys. I figure, what are the odds that you will ever think up a better plan? Chapter 19. We put my possibly not incredibly awful stupid plan into action 2 days later. 2 days after that, the Kristang took the bait. The bait was supposedly an Elder energy trap. Through their satellites, Skippy showed the scavengers a tantalizing view of an energy tap lying on the floor of a narrow canyon. Our cover story was that the artifact had been exposed by a convenient landslide. The landslide was real. The energy tap we faked up with spare parts and discarded items. It only needed to look convincing from the top of the canyon or higher. If the scavengers were marginally competent, they would have noticed the unburied energy tap within hours of the landslide. They were completely incompetent. They didn't notice the prized energy tap lying there on the ground in the intermittent sunshine. Skippy got so frustrated he wanted to call every one of their Z-phones and ask if there was any way they could be more stupid. Thankfully, he restrained himself, and the scavengers finally noticed after Skippy practically shoved it in their faces by highlighting it in their daily sensor summary. We followed their aircraft, all the way from it being flight-prepped at the scavengers' base, to watching through our satellite as 2 pilots and 8 other Kristang loaded aboard, and it took off. The aircraft was very much like the Ruhab Buzzard transport I knew from Camp Alpha in Paradise, only this one was a little bigger and a lot uglier, and beat up. Even from high orbit, the satellite cameras showed us the patched, scratched, and dented skin of the aircraft. Skippy said the maintenance records indicated the Kristang did the absolute minimum required to keep it in the air. One of the engines was more than 1,000 hours late for an overhaul, and the pilots complained that engine always ran alarmingly hot. The other engine ran only slightly too warm and produced plenty of power, except that it vibrated so much it practically shook loose from its mounting. When the scavengers left Newark, they wouldn't be taking the aircraft with them. I could see why they didn't want to put extra resources into keeping it airworthy.
And that was easy for me to say since I wasn't riding in that rattling death trap. Maybe it would fall out of the sky without us having to do anything. After it took off, Skippy followed its flight by satellite. We were able to watch it every second. The Krestang were being cautious with their beat-up aircraft. They could have come to get the fake Elder Power Tap the day before, but the weather had been bad, with low clouds and rain. The day the aircraft left the base, the weather was patchy clouds and cold, with only light winds. Perfect for landing a poorly maintained aircraft in an unfamiliar area. "What do we call it?" Smythe asked. While we watched the aircraft cruising along high above the clouds, it was headed straight for us. "The aircraft?" Adams inquired. On Paradise, the Ruhar had a similar vertical lift transport that we called a Buzzard. This is the Lizard version. We can call it a Luzzard for now. Or something like a Crow, maybe. "Luzzard is good enough for now," I said. I didn't want us to get distracted by a discussion that wasn't relevant to the operation. "Skippy, what are they saying?" "The pilots haven't communicated with their base since the aircraft reached cruising altitude. I can't hear them talking inside the aircraft." "Hey, I can relay their transmissions to you and translate it," Skippy offered. "That would be great. It would be useful to hear what the pilots were telling their base in real time. Relay it to the Zinger teams also." "Affirmative." We expected the Luzzard to overfly the bait, our fake Elder Power Tap. It made sense they would want to thoroughly check out the area. What we did not expect was for the Luzzard to fly over the area at high altitude several times, and then fly in a wide circle three times. It was a damn good thing it had rained a lot recently. The rain covered up the fact that the area near the caverns had been well trampled by humans. We had gathered grasses and shrubs from other areas and scattered them over places where we'd walked often enough to create a path through the mud. The rain couldn't hide those tracks by itself. Except for the Zinger teams and spotters like myself, everyone else was waiting deep in the caverns with all power shut off and no artificial heat sources. We were as prepared as we could be, given the circumstances. Desai, who was with me, told me the pilot likely circled in the area to look for a low-risk place to land. The Luzzard was flying slowly, cruising around, and it was a tempting target. Although it was within Zinger range, it was not comfortably within Zinger range. If the pilot detected a Zinger immediately, and the missile, for any reason, missed on its first intercept attempt, the Luzzard could have flown out of range, and that would be a disaster for us. We stuck to the plan, and waited for the Luzzard to descend. The Zinger teams remained undercover, maintaining discipline, waiting for Smythe's signal. Descend it did. Through Skippy, we heard the pilot call back to his base, announcing that he was making one more pass over the bait at low altitude, and that he intended to land on top of a canyon ridge rather than risk landing at the bottom of a canyon and not being able to fly back out in the aircraft he didn't completely trust. There was apparently some protest about that idea from the other Krestang aboard the Luzzard. It meant they would need to climb down the canyon, then all the way back up, lugging the precious power tap with them. The Luzzard approached from the south, with the sun behind it and not interfering with the pilot's vision. It descended rapidly at first, then went into a shallow dive. The pilot was going to fly over the canyon where the bait was located and land atop the canyon wall to the north. I gave the go signal to Smythe, and he took it from there. An Indian paratroop team got lucky, or unlucky. They were in the perfect position as the Luzzard approached. Just as the Luzzard cleared the South Canyon wall, the paratroopers rippled off a pair of missiles, and they were on the unfortunate Luzzard in the blink of an eye. Both Zingers impacted the Luzzard's starboard engine nacelle, drawn in by the glaring heat signature of the straining engine. Those Zingers were smart. They knew that while the engines were vulnerable and easier to target in any aircraft surrounded by a stealth field, the most vital part of the aircraft was its power center, where energy for the engines was generated and stored. That is where the Zingers would normally have targeted themselves, which would have been no good for our purpose. We needed the Krestang to see a Luzzard that fell out of the sky because an engine exploded. For them to fly over the crash site and see that missiles had ripped holes in the body of the aircraft would have screwed up all our plans. That is why the Spec Ops Zinger teams manually targeted the starboard engines and locked the Zinger's seekers there before launch. Without a stealth field, without the pilots taking any precautions against an enemy they didn't even know was on the planet, and with the pilots flying low and slow over the canyon, searching for the bait we'd planted, the Luzzard was a sitting duck. The first missile destroyed the starboard engine,
The second missile impacting a split second later obliterated what was left of the engine, plus most of the sponson it was attached to. Missile warhead debris and engine turbine blades splattered the fuselage, ripping it apart like tissue paper. The Luzzard staggered in the air, spinning rapidly to the right, its nose in the air, then it flipped over on its back and fell straight down. The tail clipped the lip of the North Canyon cliff, shearing part of the tail off, and sending the Luzzard tumbling end over end, bouncing off the canyon wall on its way down to a violent crash on the canyon floor where it rolled over several times. What was left, which was surprisingly intact, came to rest with the back half partly submerged in a stream. "Alpha Team's hold position," I ordered. Captain Joe, I knew, was itching to get into real action with his Alpha Team in powered armor suits, and I couldn't blame him one bit. The Kristang we'd seen boarding the Luzzard had been wearing typical cold weather gear, no armor and no weapons that we could see. It was possible one or two armor suits were inside the Luzzard and the Kristang had donned them in flight. That seemed unlikely. From the intel Skippy had gathered, access to the armor was restricted to the high-ranking Kristang. It was intended for them to keep their forced labor under control. Considering that, I couldn't see their leaders allowing the laborers in the Luzzard having access to any type of weapon. I also couldn't see how anyone, even genetically perfected super warriors like Kristang, could have survived the crash. The super-tough composites of the hull structure had held together, in conditions where a human-built craft would have been flaming chunks. For all their enhancements, the Kristang were biological, with the limitations of biology. The extreme G-loads of the crash must have snapped necks, crushed rib cages, torn limbs off. There was no way, I was sure, any of them could have survived that. I think I was sure. "Alpha Team, hold position," I ordered. "Repeat, hold position."
"Acknowledged," Joe replied tersely.
"Skippy, you feeding our cover story in the video?"
"Affirmative," Skippy said with uncharacteristic brevity.
A friendly beer can controlling data feeds through the Kristang's two satellites was the key to our entire plan to knock out the scavengers' advantage of air power and whittle down their numbers. What we saw on the ground was a Luzzard flying slowly over our fake Elder treasure, and a pair of Zingers racing up from the ground to blow up the Luzzard's starboard engine. We heard through our Z-phones the pilots shouting a warning about missiles, then the Luzzard fell out of the sky and crashed to the bottom of the canyon. If the Kristang at their scavenger base had seen the same thing, it would have been an absolute disaster for the merry band of pirates. The Kristang would have been alerted to the presence of a hostile force on Newark. They likely would have overflown us to recon the area at high altitude with the dropship, keeping above Zinger missile range. They could have used the dropship to follow us on our march to their base, dropping off armor-suited warriors to harass us. And they would have prepared defenses around their base so that it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for us to successfully attack. Their leaders could, likely would, even have taken the dropship with their precious Elder artifacts up into orbit or to another part of the planet that we couldn't get to by walking. And when their retrieval ship arrived, the scavengers certainly would have told the ship about an unknown hostile group on Newark, and that ship would have pounded our positions to dust from orbit. Bottom line, we needed to shoot down the Luzzard and make the Kristang think it was an accident, completely conceal our presence on the planet. Enter the magic of Skippy the Magnificent. Through his complete control of the two Kristang satellites, he was already assuring that the scavenger lizards did not see any sign of human activity on Newark. The satellites edited the image and sensor data they transmitted down to the scavengers, so they only saw what we wanted them to see. They hadn't seen our dropships making multiple trips to bring people and supplies down to Newark. They didn't see humans walking around. They didn't see the solar panels we set out. They didn't detect increased infrared radiation from the heat human activity generated. When the Kristang looked at satellite images, if they ever bothered to look at our area of the planet, all they saw was grasslands, low-growing shrubs, mud and rocks. Oh, and streams and rivers here and there. No humans. No sign that Newark was inhabited by any other sentient species. With Skippy in complete control of the audio, video, and sensor data feeds through the satellites, what the Kristang at the scavenger base saw and heard was their Luzzard hovering over a priceless Elder artifact, then the pilots shouting a warning that the starboard engine was overheating. The engine then tore itself apart, and the Luzzard crashed down. The pilot's last words were to curse the scavenger's leaders for ignoring his warnings about neglecting engine maintenance. The video feed through the satellites did not show humans approach the wreck, with some of those humans in Kristang-powered armor.
All the video feed showed was the busted Luzzard laying dead on the floor of the canyon with no movement in or around it. And the video feed showed a priceless Elder artifact, still there, still exposed in the patchy sunlight. Still tempting. Too tempting for the scavengers to ignore. The scavenger leaders may not have cared about the Kristang who died in the crash. They may have written off the Luzzard as a cost of doing business. There was no way they were going to ignore a priceless Elder treasure that could make their entire miserable expedition pay off for them. What I was counting on was that the scavengers still had air transport, their dropship, and they would be coming for our decoy in that dropship, coming unaware their Luzzard crash had not been an accident, unaware that humans inhabited Newark. I was counting on greed, I was counting on desperation, and more importantly, I was counting on Kristang being Kristang. When their starship arrived to retrieve them, if that ship detected the Elder artifact still sitting exposed in the open, far from the scavenger base, the captain of that ship would be strongly tempted to land in his own dropship and take the artifact for himself. No way would the scavenger leaders risk that. They were coming again for our decoy. Of that, I was certain. After 10 minutes with no movement from the crashed Luzzard, I gave Smite the go-ahead signal to send in the Alpha teams. Two Chinese were closest. When they got the signal, they popped up from the covered hole they'd been concealed in and quickly raced across the muddy grass to the crashed Luzzard. Those two soldiers had way more discipline than I could have managed under the circumstances. In powered armor, I would have rocketed out of that hole 30 feet in the air and leaped halfway to the target in a single bound. These soldiers used the advantage of their suit's power in a controlled fashion, sticking close to the ground, rifles always fixed securely on the back ramp of the Luzzard. The rear door had popped open in the crash. The force of the impact wrenched the top of the ramp loose from its latching mechanism. One of the soldiers held a Z-phone up to the gap so we could get a view inside the Luzzard, while the other soldier covered him.
"I don't see anything moving in there," Joe declared.
"Agree," Smythe said.
"Wait for the French Alpha team. Then we go in."
The two French soldiers in powered armor, who had been concealed a half kilometer down the canyon, were almost at the crash site, approaching from the front of the Luzzard. Through the feed from the Z-phone network, we could all see inside the busted ship. It was chaos in there. The Kristang had exercised poor discipline in securing items inside their ship. The crash had caused all kinds of equipment to break loose and fly around inside the cargo compartment. The occupants may have been in more danger from their own gear than from falling 200 meters straight down. Whatever caused the damage, they appeared to all be dead. There wasn't anything moving inside the main compartment of the Luzzard. Two lizard bodies were visible in the narrow view provided by the Z-phone. Their legs were at awkward angles, and dark red blood was seeping onto the floor. When the French arrived, one of them slung his rifle and jumped easily up on top of the Luzzard near the front, then lay down and crept forward to peer in the cockpit windows.
"They're both dead up here," he said, holding a Z-phone so we could all see the carnage.
I recognized the voice. It was René Giraud. And if I had been paying attention, there was an icon at the bottom of my Z-phone screen telling me the view I was watching was from Giraud, R., French. The Kristang were hateful lizards, but they made good phones. Especially after Skippy replaced the original software with something of his own creation.
"They must have been hit by shrapnel from the warheads," Giraud reported. "The windows have holes in them. The cockpit is shredded. It's ugly," he said softly.
"Should we check inside, sir?" Smythe asked.
"Yes, if we can get the back ramp or a side door open. I don't want to cause any damage that doesn't look like it was caused by the crash," I said. "We need to maintain our cover story as much as possible."
The side door had a recessed handle, with instructions written in Kristang that Skippy had the visors on the suits translate for the Alpha team. It was simple. In case of emergency, the door was supposed to be easy for rescuers to open, just like a human aircraft. One of the Chinese got the side door open easily and panned his Z-phone around. There was still nothing moving in there. Because the armor suits were bulky, the four Alpha team members waited for the Indian team without suits to arrive from up the canyon. The four Indian paratroopers quickly entered the Luzzard, and within 30 seconds reported that the Kristang inside were all dead. "Understood," I said. "All teams pull back, cover our tracks." That was the signal for the Alpha teams, weighed down with armor, to leave the area first,
and for the people not wearing armor to sweep the embedded footprints and cover deep, muddy footprints with grass we'd collected from other areas. When they were done, it was hard to tell anyone had been there, and as heavy rain was expected that night, all signs would be securely washed away by morning. I called that a success. Phase one, complete. When I'd explained my Phase 2 plan to deal with the Scavenger's second aircraft, a dropship, and destroy the Scavenger's remaining air power, Smythe had not been enthusiastic.
No good, Smythe had said, pointing at the map. Too many possible landing sites for us to cover. We only have 6 Zingers left.
Captain, I asked, tell me, where would you land that dropship?
Well, that's the problem.
I'd touch down here. He indicated a spot far to the east of the site where we had placed the fake Elder power tap.
Or here, or here, or here. Touchdown, drop off a 3-man team in armored suits, then drop off another 3-man team in armor somewhere over here,
to the west of the crash site.
Then the dropship would fly high cover, out of Zinger range, while their 2 teams approached the target from opposite directions.
I nodded. That's what I would do also. That's not what these Kristang will do.
Dr. Mesker, could you come here, please?
Certainly.
What is it, Mr. Bishop?
Mesker didn't get the nuances of military rank structure. I pointed to the crash site on the map.
This is the decoy landslide site. You familiar with the area? We put our bait there, the fake Elder power tap. It's in that canyon behind the cathedral complex.
Yeah, sure, I've been there. That's a steep canyon.
Right. I tapped the crash site on the map. If you were flying in to examine the decoy site, where would you land? He tapped the map to bring up a satellite picture overlay, then back to the map.
Here. The canyon widens out, and the floor is big enough to land on this side of the stream. Plus, it's an easy walk up to the crash site. Except you'd need to cross the stream here. It hugs the canyon wall.
I smiled. Thank you, Dr. Mesker.
Captain Smythe. That's how a civilian thinks, and that's how the Kristang here think also.
These scavengers are civilians, they're not soldiers.
You're used to planning to counter a military opponent.
Remember, these particular Kristang have no reason to think the Luzzard crash was anything but an accident. They think they're alone on this planet. They're going to land that dropship as close as possible to reduce the distance they have to walk to our decoy and the distance they have to carry anything they salvage from the crash.
Mesker is right. They're going to land on the canyon floor somewhere, likely further down than he said, because their pilot doesn't want to take any risks with their 1 remaining aircraft. He'll want a clear path for a takeoff if he's fully loaded on the return.
Somewhere in this area. I pointed near where that canyon opened into a broad, shallow canyon. Your Zinger teams can take position above the canyon here, and here, and on the canyon floor here. That dropship will likely overfly the crash site before selecting a spot for landing. You can hit him as he's over the canyon. Minimize the pilot's reaction time.
Captain Smythe thought for a moment, then nodded.
What do you think? I asked. 2 Zinger teams on the canyon floor covering the best land in sight, and 1 team on each side of the top of the canyon?
2 on the canyon floor, yes. I'll want them able to cover each other. 1 on top of the canyon wall, as you said, the south side. And I also want 1 team up here, on this hilltop. A team up there can cover the whole area. The hilltop doesn't give the best angle for a shot. We'll keep that Zinger team in reserve in case things go very sideways.
I, of course, approved the Spec Ops team leader's plan because he knew a lot more about clandestine operations than I did. To my surprise, when the dropship arrived, Smythe wanted me atop the hillside instead of watching the action from inside the cave. Of all the people on Newark, Smythe explained, I was the only one who had fired a Zinger in combat. The Spec Ops troops had trained with a simulator aboard the Dutchman, but they all had much more extensive experience with whichever model of manned portable air defense missile their country's military used on Earth. Smythe was concerned that in the tension of combat, Zinger teams would be subconsciously thinking in terms of the manpad missiles they were familiar with on Earth and not the much more capable Zingers on their shoulders. He wanted me essentially acting as a spotter on the hilltop for the primary Zinger teams below on the canyon floor. That was much better than what I expected him to want me to do, which was to sit in the cave and watch the action on an iPad or Z-phone screen. He even went so far to suggest that if the hilltop team, our reserves in case things went squirrely, needed to shoot at the dropship, I personally should fire the missile.
You have experience shooting a Zinger, sir, Smythe explained. Your report from Paradise says you got off a snapshot at a chicken that was unaware of you and about to shoot back. That's one less variable to worry about if we truly need it.
I appreciate your confidence, Captain. I will be on the hilltop, while Smythe was on the valley floor where we expected the dropship to land. There shouldn't be anything to be concerned about. These Zingers are extremely easy to use. I certainly hoped I was right about that. Until Smythe mentioned it, I hadn't even considered our